The 7,231st meeting of the Security Council is called to order. The provisional agenda for this meeting is implementation of the note by the President of the Security Council S/2010/507. The agenda is adopted. The Security Council will now begin its consideration of item 2 of the agenda. I wish to draw the attention of Council members to document S/2014/526, a later dated 22nd July 2014 from the Permanent Representative of Rwanda to the United Nations addressed to the Secretary General, transmitting a concept paper on the item under consideration. At the outset, I will make an introductory statement summarizing the work of the Council during the month of July 2014. Let me start by recalling that in the Rwanda's current term in the Security Council, during which our country presided over the Security Council twice, in April 2013 and in July 2014, we decided to convene wrap-up sessions at the end of both presidencies. Last year in April, the session was organized under the format of a private meeting, closed to the public and to the media. But this year, Rwanda decided to convene a wrap-up session under the format of a public briefing. The convening of this meeting under this format was based on the need to enhance transparency and to enable the larger public to be well apprised of the Council's work. We recall that under Article 24 of the UN Charter, it is the UN General Membership, which represents the citizens of all our countries, that confers on the Security Council the primary responsibility for the maintenance of international peace and security. As stated in the concept note circulated earlier this month, this wrap-up session is an opportunity for Council members to have an exchange of views on the situations addressed by the Council in July 2014, as well as on its methods of work during this month. It is also useful for the UN membership and the public to better understand the activities and dynamics in the Security Council. However, as it is the practice since the Pakistani presidency in January 2013, which revived the tradition of wrap-up sessions, this meeting was not convened to give to Council members an additional opportunity to reiterate the well-known positions on substantive items discussed during the month. Rather, it shall be an opportunity for the Council to assess its work through country-specific situations and thematic issues considered during the month, and critically examine its progress on those issues, its processes, and how it can increase its efficiency and effectiveness. Turning to the activities of the Council during the month of July 2014, we will hold, by the end of the month, 35 meetings overall, mainly related to conflict-specific situations, but also to thematic debates such as peacekeeping and post-conflict peace building. Those meetings include two open debates, which are the quarterly open debate on Middle East, including the Palestinian question, held on Tuesday, 22nd July, and the open debate on regional partnerships in peacekeeping and its evolution, held on Monday, 28th July. With the meeting scheduled tomorrow, we would have held 10 briefings, including emergency briefings on the situation in Israel, Palestine, and in eastern Ukraine, as well as a briefing on post-conflict peace building. This later briefing was followed by an informal interactive dialogue between the members of the Security Council, the chairs of various configurations of the peace building commissions, the commission, the chair of the PBC working group on lessons learned, and the countries on the PBC agenda. The Security Council also convened 15 consultations and a meeting of the troops and police contributing countries of the United Nations peacekeeping force in Cyprus. During the month of July 2014, the Security Council adopted unanimously 5 resolutions, which are Resolution 2065 on the humanitarian situation in Syria, Resolution 2166 on the shooting down of the Malaysia Airlines flight MH17, Resolution 2167 on regional partnerships in peacekeeping, as well as Resolution 2168 and 2169 adopted this morning, extending the mandates of UNFICIP and on the United Nations assistance mission in Iraq, respectively. Lastly, the Council adopted 3 presidential statements, 16 press statements, as well as 3 press elements. It is worth noting that the number of press statements adopted this month of July 2014 is the highest since the introduction of press statement as a tool of the Security Council in November 2000. I thank you. I now give the floor to the members of the Security Council. We'll start by Argentina. You have the floor, madam.
Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much, Mr. President. Firstly, I shall begin by recognizing your initiative of convening this wrap-up meeting, and it's the 6th wrap-up meeting this year. I will not reiterate those reasons for which Argentina believes that these meetings are fundamental in their importance. The fact that all non-permanent members and a few permanent members have convened or plan to convene wrap-up meetings during their presidencies in this year is something that we hope will motivate those members that continue to harbor some doubts as to the usefulness and of these meetings and that it might motivate them to do it as well. Mr. President, in keeping with your guidelines, I will evaluate the work of the Council in this month of July with a view to some recommendations on how the Council might improve its efficiency and effectiveness, as well as its legitimacy. I'd like to first thank you, sir, for the open debate that you organized on the participation of regional organizations in peacekeeping operations. Given that the very Charter of the United Nations promotes the use of, quote-unquote, regional agreements by the Security Council in fulfilling its primary responsibility of maintaining international peace and security, the future of peacekeeping operations of the United Nations is inextricably linked to the process of regionalization of peace missions. Also, in view of the significant changes that have been taking place since Argentina joined this Council in 2013 in peacekeeping operations with increasingly robust mandates as well as the use of new technologies, just to mention a few of these changes, these debates therefore provide the membership with a forum to express their views and or not participate in the process in taking decisions, which in my country's judgment is how it should be. Mr. President, you had the challenging and sad privilege of conducting our work in the 15 days that are perhaps the most dramatic and intense 15 days in recent years 15 days where there has been a true watershed in three of the most serious conflicts on this Council's agenda, and which are very significant for the international community due to their implications for not just regional peace and security, but also worldwide peace and security. In these 15 days, from the 14th of July, the members of the Council were able to overcome our differences and adopt Resolution 2165, through which we decided that humanitarian organizations of the United Nations and international partners to the UN could, with notification to the Syrian authorities, use routes through conflict lines and the four authorized border point crossings, as well as those that are already being used, in order to ensure that humanitarian assistance be provided. However, Mr. President, the fact that this resolution was necessary is the result of the systematic and deliberate noncompliance by all parties in the Syrian conflict with prior decisions taken by the Security Council, including the other resolution of the Council, Resolution 2139, passed just 5 months ago. 2 weeks is too soon to be able to evaluate the implementation of Resolution 2165, but we hope and require that this resolution will bring about a change in trend, which we hope will bring about positive change after adoption of Resolution 2139, and that positive change will impact the lives of thousands of people. 3 days later, on the 17th of July, we witnessed one of the worst tragedies in international commercial aviation, where 300 people lost their lives when they were flying over a zone that is involved in violence in a conflict, which, not by the number of victims, although recent figures say that some 700 civilians have passed since the beginning of the military campaign of the government against the separatist rebels in the east of Ukraine since the middle of April. So, although not due to the size of the conflict, but due to its geopolitical dimension and its potential ramifications from the point of view of international peace and security, this is a very serious conflict for the international community as well as this Council. For the first time in 4 months, the horror, given the consequences of an incident not caused intentionally, at least we hope that's the case, allowed the members of this Council, without some acrimony and without difficult negotiations, we were finally able to achieve a consensus that led to the adoption on the 21st of July of Resolution 2166. After 10 days after issuing that resolution, the calls of the Security Council seem not to have been heard, given the ongoing and persistent difficulties to have access to the site where the plane fell and to put an end to the rescuing of the victims' bodies and the remains and to conduct an investigation of the incident. Due to the ongoing military activities in this area and the fact that they didn't stop as the Council required. During the 15 days that we have been experiencing for the third time in at least 6 years, once again Gaza is submerged in violence, the consequences of which have led to mostly suffering for the civilian population, children, boys and girls, and women. Despite the calls of this Council, boys and girls, women, persons with disabilities, innocent civilians have suffered in these days, and they have suffered the worst sides of violence. And not just the calls of this Council, but the calls of other parts of the international community have called for moderation. And all we have seen is intensification of the fighting and open defiance of obligations as opposed by international humanitarian law, human rights, and the protection of civilian. Given the horror of 1,300 civilian victims and attacks on educational centers and the deepening of the humanitarian crisis, which is overwhelming the international community's response capacity, members of the Council were able to agree on a few elements for the press, a press release, and even a presidential statement where we had to meet at midnight on a Sunday to try and adopt it, given the gravity and urgency of the situation. Through that statement on the 28th of July, the council demanded an immediate ceasefire, and despite that, it took at least 24 hours. Yesterday itself, Gaza suffered the greatest bombings since the beginning of the recent crisis. Through the president's statement, the council urged all parties to respect humanitarian and civilian facilities, including those of the United Nations. And that same morning, we awoke here in New York to the news that 15 persons had died as a result of an attack on a school of the United Nations, which was sheltering refugees from Gaza. Mr. President, despite the differences Syria, Ukraine, and the Palestine-Israel conflict have in common, the fact that they are conflicts where the Security Council has had a limited role and maybe even a marginal role, given the differences that arise amongst the permanent members of this council, which also reflects, and it would be unfair not to recognize it, the differences of the international community itself. Those differences are obvious, not just the disagreements, but also the agreements achieved within this council. Through its resolutions, presidential statements, and other statements, all of this shows that in the very best of cases, these are ambiguous and weak agreements and are usually completely ignored by those parties to whom they are addressed. The vacuum left by the Security Council has been occupied, also in the best of cases, by countries, leaders, and regional organizations. In your concept note, Mr. President, you asked that we make recommendations to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of our work. I am not sure that I have specific recommendations to make, but what I do have is one general call. As we are clamoring for an active role of countries, leaders, and organizations in different crises, we also clamor for that from this Security Council. And we do it being part of the Security Council. We've said it every single time we've met in order to address these situations, and we repeat it today. We believe that the Security Council, assuming the responsibilities conferred upon it by the Charter, can and should more firmly accompany the efforts undertaken to create conditions so that the various parties from Ukraine through Syria to Israel and Palestine can renew talks with a view to achieving solutions, specific solutions, political solutions, which is the only guarantee of lasting peace and security. Far from opposing bilateral diplomacy or the diplomacy of other groups of states or organizations, but it should not be at the expense of the Security Council, which would end up being an institution empty of any content and incapable of having any impact on resolving conflicts. What this is about is finding complementary, convergent, and effective strategies. It is about recovering our ethics, complying with what the Charter mandates. Argentina believes that true multilateralism, the multilateralism which should be encountered in this space and projection in our organization, cannot be conceived of as an obstacle to achieving a fairer and more peaceful world. It's not about multilateralism versus bilateral relations, nor is it multilateralism versus regional organization. Each of these strategies and dimensions have a role to play in a coordinated and joint manner in reaching towards a common objective. But we need to recognize at the same time that it is the multilateral that guarantees that all states and their peoples, without any exclusions, can be heard and recognized, equal in dignity and rights. Mr. President, I don't know if this is your last session as President of the Council, but as this is a necessary meeting for the Security Council, I'd like to take this opportunity to most sincerely congratulate you on your stewardship of our work during this month. I'd like to thank you and your entire team, and I would also like to take this opportunity to wish the United Kingdom every success in their presidency and offer them all of our support as needed. Thank you.
Thank the representative of Argentina. I give now the floor to the representative of Luxembourg. So
Monsieur le Président,
Je voudrais...
Mr. President, I'd like to start by conveying my gratitude to you for having planned such a wrap-up session for work this month. As you know, my delegation strongly backs this type of exercise. It affords us a welcome opportunity to take stock of our action during the past month, but also to look towards the future. I'd also want to pay tribute to your initiative of convening this meeting for the first time since 2005, taking the form of a public information session. This, of course, contributes to strengthening the transparency in the Council's work. Allow me, finally, to congratulate you, as well as the whole of your team, for the outstanding way in which you have led the Security Council during this month of July, one which was peppered with crises. I look at three issues which were quite prominent on the agenda this month. Let's start with Syria. Upon the initiative of Australia, of Jordan, and Luxembourg, the Security Council unanimously, on July 14th, adopted Resolution 2165. This last is based on the decision taken by the Council in Resolution 2139, and its adoption would not have been necessary if Resolution 2139 had in fact been complied with. By deciding that the humanitarian agencies of the United Nations and their various partners are authorized to use roads which cross conflict lines, as well as four additional border posts, to ensure that humanitarian assistance reaches the population in the most direct possible way throughout all Syria, and this without the consent of the Syrian authorities. Well, 2165 projects a glimmer, or provides a glimmer of hope, against a backdrop of a very grim picture. The resolution should enable 2.9 million individuals currently beyond the reach of humanitarian actors in Syria from receiving aid. This morning we have heard a first very encouraging briefing by Ms. Valerie Amos regarding its implementation. The Council will have to remain vigilant and take additional measures in case of non-compliance with the provisions of Resolutions 2165 and 2139. However, humanitarian assistance will never be more than something we can somewhat ease the situation. Only political settlement, in keeping with the Geneva Communique of June 2012, can put an end to the horrible suffering of the Syrian population. We welcome the appointment of Mr. Staffan de Mistura as Special Envoy of the Secretary-General for Syria and his assistant, Mr. Ramzi Yezzeldin Ramzi. We hope that the Security Council will soon be in a position to take stock with them regarding their ideas for relaunching a democratic political process in Syria. Let me now move on to Ukraine. At a time when the separatist armed groups and their external backers continue to destabilize a country and to undermine its sovereignty and territorial integrity, an additional path in this scenario of horrors has been crossed when MH17 of Malaysia Airways airliner was shot down above eastern Ukraine on July 17th. 298 innocent civilians died in this tragedy. The Security Council was able to reach consensus regarding the adoption of Resolution 2166, which was prepared by Australian colleagues. Well, despite this, we continue to witness horrendous behavior by illegal armed groups which are restricting access to the accident site and preventing us from recuperating the bodies, or recovering rather, the bodies of the victims. We urge all sides, especially the armed groups and those who back them, to guarantee without any further delay safe access, unhampered access to the accident site for the international inquiry mission. The tragedy of MH17 reminds us of the importance of stepping up our diplomatic efforts to create conducive conditions for the implementation of the peace plan of President Poroshenko. We need to find a solution to this crisis before it is too late. Diplomacy must also come into play, and the Security Council must fully play its role in another context, that of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which has erupted yet again in Gaza, with now close to 1,350 killed, and the humanitarian distress has surpassed the very difficult period which took place during the CAST-led operation of 2009. Israel has the right to defend itself against the indiscriminate strikes by Hamas aimed at the civilian population in Israel. But this right cannot lead to the disproportionate use of Israeli military force, which continues to inflict terrible suffering on the civilian population in Gaza. I'm here especially referring to the more than 200 Palestinian children which were killed during the three last weeks. Absolute priority should be granted to the achievement of a ceasefire. Any lasting solution to the crisis in Gaza must tackle the deep-rooted causes of this crisis and provide the Palestinian population with an opportunity to live their life in full dignity. This should involve a lifting of the blockade to put an end to the inhumane conditions imposed on the population in Gaza, but such a measure is not sufficient in itself if what we really want to do is to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The only possible path to live in peace will be the acceptance by both sides of the aforementioned solution. We cherish a hope that the presidential statement which was adopted on the eve of the Eid feast upon the initiative of our Jordanian colleagues means that the Security Council will continue to speak out, to contribute actively to settling the crisis in Gaza and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Mr. President, a great deal remains to be said on the various hotbeds of crisis in Africa, which are on the Security Council's agenda. I'm referring here to South Sudan, where the situation is especially serious from the point of view of both security and humanitarian aspects, as well as human rights, of course. The South Sudanese civilian population suffers as a result of the obdurate behavior of the leaders of both camps, rejecting every and all peace initiatives. The international community must know that this council will not tolerate impunity when it comes to violations of human rights and international humanitarian law within the framework of this conflict, and that those who are guilty will be identified and brought to justice. And finally, I'd like to congratulate Rwanda for having taken the initiative of organizing a public debate on the partnership between the United Nations and regional organizations within the framework of peacekeeping. Resolution 2167, adopted before yesterday, will help us to bolster this partnership, which is of increasing importance. By way of conclusion, I do not doubt that August will be a decisive month when it comes to settling of a number of crises I've just referred to. Luxembourg stands ready to work actively to this end under the presidency of the United Kingdom. I'd like to, as of now, assure my colleague Ambassador Mark Lyle Grant and his team of our full support. Thank you, sir.
I thank the representative of Luxembourg. I give now the floor to the representative of Chad.
Merci, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. I'd like to start by congratulating you for the sense of leadership with which you have led the work of the Council during your term of office, which is now coming to an end, and also congratulate the team which assisted you in this exercise in what was, after all, a very difficult context. President, the Security Council's activities this month are drawing to an end. They were dominated by crises in the Middle East, including the Palestinian question, but also Ukraine. Six meetings over 2 weeks, including two emergency ones, were devoted to the Middle East, and four, including two emergency meetings, devoted to Ukraine. Three very important resolutions were adopted unanimously by the members of the Security Council. A number of statements to the press were published, and our delegation welcomes this. Turning to the situation in Syria, Chad welcomes the successful conduct of the operation aimed at the destruction and elimination of chemical weapons and the adoption unanimously of 2165 on the humanitarian situation in that country. We do, however, remain deeply concerned by the human tragedy which is unfolding in Syria and affecting the Syrian population without any political solution becoming apparent on the horizon. We deplore the inability of the Security Council to be able to assist the parties to the conflict in seeking solutions to the crisis. We welcome the fact that the Security Council has not lost sight of the impact of the Syrian crisis on other conflicts in the region. And we urge the Council to continue its efforts in finding a lasting political solution. There is, of course, no military solution to the Syrian crisis. The situation in the Middle East following the escalation of violence in Gaza took up the Council's time, and the Council's repeated calls for a ceasefire unfortunately have remained dead letter. Violence in Gaza has reached unacceptable levels, and the number of civilian victims but continues to grow on a daily basis and now reaches the hundreds, indeed the thousands. We regret the impotence of the Security Council faced with this tragedy. Chad, like a number of other delegations, called for an immediate ceasefire and a cessation of Israeli military operations and the firing of rockets at Israel to enable negotiations to resume. The grim toll of victims resulting from the Israeli operation has now surpassed 1,200 dead and 600 injured in the Gaza Strip, the majority of them civilians. The number of displaced has now surpassed 17,000 individuals. President, the Council has also considered the 13th report presented by Mr. Said Chini on the situation in Western Africa, covering the period from January 1st through June 30th, 2014. Chad welcomes progress achieved in settling a number of political and security-related problems, including the implementation of the strategy regarding border security of the Manu River Union, the restoration of constitutional order in Guinea-Bissau, and, of course, BINUSIL's successful operations. However, the challenges which remain to be met are many, especially when it comes to trans-border organized crime, drug trafficking, terrorism, piracy in the Gulf of Guinea, and security-related problems. In this respect, the fight against the Boko Haram terrorist group requires a pooling of efforts and close cooperation between the states of the sub-region, even between the various sub-regions. Chad welcomes the Security Council attention granted to multilateral cooperation between the states of ECOWAS faced with the threat presented by Boko Haram in northeastern Nigeria and neighboring countries. The Ebola epidemic, which is currently raging in Western Africa, is a just as serious threat, and it continues to spread quite dangerously and ominously towards other countries. The international community must mobilize to prevent its spread on a larger scale. Chad welcomes the outstanding cooperation between the United Nations and the African Union, especially in terms of peacekeeping. The efforts and sacrifices made by MINUSMA and MISCA enabled us to prepare the ground for the deployment of United Nations operations, NISMA and MISMA. To strengthen this partnership further, it is important that the issue of the financing of African Union operations and difficulties related to the transition from African missions to United Nations missions and the role of the OAU, or should I say the African Union, in the pre-transition period and the appointment of personnel to lead the missions should be considered further upstream during upcoming debates. The support of the Security Council is decisive for the African Union's efforts aimed at making operational the African Union's rapid response capacity as African Union leaders have committed themselves to during the Malabo African Union meeting on the 26th and 27th of June 2014, clearly shows. Now, by way of conclusion, I'd like to again reiterate my congratulations. The same goes to his team, the delegation of Rwanda, for all their work and their bravery during this very difficult term in office. I'd like to seize this opportunity to congratulate the United Kingdom upon its accession to the presidency of the Council for the month of August, and to reassure the incoming team of our unreserved support, and we wish you every possible success. Thank you so much, Mr. President.
Gentlemen, I give now the floor to the representative of Lithuania. Have the floor.
Mr. President, I wish to congratulate you for your astute steering of the Council during the month of July. Our appreciation goes to you and your team for the patient, professional, and diligent work during a demanding and difficult month where multiple crises had to be tackled simultaneously. We appreciate the number of open events held by the Rwandan presidency, including this open wrap-up session in a public briefing format, the first since 2005. Open debates and public briefings play a vital role in keeping UN membership abreast of deliberations in a council. It is only right, given that the implementation of Council decisions behooves the entire membership. Sanctions, for example. This Council may adopt all the sanctions at once, but if the wider membership is unaware of its decisions, unable or unwilling to engage, sanctions, no matter how well designed, will have no impact on the ground. Open briefings, direct engagement with the country's neighbors, other interested states, raises awareness of existing sanctions regimes and helps to advance their implementation. As chair of car sanctions regime during an open briefing in July, I stress the need and stress it once again for car neighbors and wider membership to cooperate on the implementation on Security Council Resolution 2127, including by providing full support and access to the panel of experts. For sanctions to work in this, as in other cases, we need coherent and determined actions by all actors. To do so, the complexity of targeted sanctions, existing legal challenges, lack of enforcement capacity, and other relevant issues needs to be addressed. In this regard, we found the informal discussion on sanctions for USG Jeff Feltman earlier this month very timely. We encourage the DPA and other relevant UN departments and entities to continue these efforts and to further engage with the Council on the matter. Peacekeeping is yet another area where Council decisions affect the wider membership through assessed contributions as well as troops and material contributions and at times by the loss of peacekeepers' lives. For some time now, the Council agenda has been expanding to unprecedented levels. The risk of peacekeeping overstretch may no longer be an issue of a distant future unless we manage to reduce the number of conflicts themselves, questions of how to make do with available limited resources, how to mobilize ever larger numbers of peacekeeping troops, and handle the ever-constant problem of critical enablers, among others, will become increasingly acute. We appreciate the Rwandan presidency organizing an open debate on UN partnerships with regional organizations in peacekeeping, which provided an opportunity to explore the advantages and existing shortcomings, as well as ways forward in making best use of UN regional organizations' peacekeeping synergies. As peacekeeping evolves into ever more complex, multifunctional, and robust operations, we appreciate the Secretary General's initiative to conduct a wide-ranging review of UN peacekeeping ahead of the 15th anniversary of the Brahimi Report. The multiplication of conflicts and the inevitable finiteness of available resources necessary to tackle them reaffirms the importance of early warning and prevention. In this respect, the mediation work undertaken by the DPA as well as the mediation and good offices of the Secretary General deserve our full support. Right now, efforts are required on multiple fronts. In Afghanistan, the post-election power crisis needs to be carefully managed and resolved, and the UN and this Council have a critical role to play in supporting vote verification, helping the country steer towards a solution that would strengthen the political and democratic processes in a country. In recent days, the Middle East has seen some of the most dramatic mediation efforts. My delegation commends the determined and tireless efforts by Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry to find a solution to the crisis. The rapidly growing number of civilian casualties, many of whom are children, is heartbreaking, and a stark reminder of the need by all parties to respect international humanitarian law and ensure protection of civilians. This Council spoke with one voice last Sunday night by adopting a relevant PRST calling for a humanitarian ceasefire. We urge the Secretary General U.S. Secretary of State and all other actors with an influence on the parties to continue tirelessly their mediation efforts aimed at establishing a sustainable humanitarian ceasefire on the basis of the Egyptian proposal and addressing the legitimate concerns of the parties. We welcome the Secretary General's critical visit to Iraq, whose unity and territorial integrity are being threatened by the spread of ISIS. The rare brutality and way of operation of this new breed of terrorists is, in our view, requires some fresh thinking on how best to employ the extensive counterterrorism toolbox at our disposal in combating radical extremism and terrorist threats. My delegation welcomes the appointment of Staffan de Mistura as UN mediator for Syria and hopes that this appointment will reinvigorate the search for a political solution to the Syrian crisis. Implementation of Council Resolutions 2139 and 2165, which was adopted unanimously on July the 14th, must remain high on the Council's agenda. Although some humanitarian aid has recently entered Syria from Turkey, significant problems and failures to implement the resolutions remain, as discussed earlier today. Continued failure to implement the two resolutions must bear consequences for those responsible. An IRIA formula meeting last week with the participation of representatives of the International Commission on Inquiry in Syria reminded once again of the scale and horror of crimes committed in this country and imperative of putting an end to impunity. The flexibility and informality of IRIA formula meetings is a great asset in our work and must continue unrestricted to provide additional insights into the issues on the Council's agenda. Mr. President, after 20 meetings on Ukraine, in July the Council managed to adopt one resolution, 2166, co-sponsored by 13 members of his council, regarding the downing of Malaysian Airlines flight MH17, which cost the lives of 298 passengers from 11 countries. My delegation stresses once again the urgency of a full, thorough, and independent international investigation into the shooting down of MH17 as stipulated by Resolution 2166. The perpetrators of the downing of the plane must be identified and brought to account. The tampering of evidence and obstruction of investigation by pro-Russian armed separatists and the degrading treatment of the remains of the victims, marauding and theft of personal items of the victims, speaks loud and clear to the true nature of the separatists. They who denied dignity to the dead have also perpetrated countless abuses and crimes against the living. As the most recent OHCHR report testifies, egregious human rights violations continue to take place in territories controlled by pro-Russian militias, including intimidations, abductions, torture, and killings. In spite of all the ample evidence, Russia is yet to disown and condemn the illegal armed separatist groups which bear full responsibility for the bloodshed in eastern Ukraine. To do any less is to give these illegal militants a carte blanche to continue their criminal acts. Detractory finger-pointing elsewhere will not change the reality of these facts. To conclude, Mr. President, let me once again thank the Rwandan team for their dedicated work as Presidency of the Council during the month of July. At the same time, I would like to wish the incoming UK Presidency best success, and you can count on our full support. I thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of Lithuania for her statement. I give now the floor to the representative of the United States.
Mr. President, thank you for your steady and very efficient stewardship of the Council this month. The Rwandan coffee you shared with us at the beginning of July has held us in good stead. To the delegation of the United Kingdom, we wish you a successful month of August and look forward to working with you. You have our full support. Today, I'd like to address areas where the Council has been productive during this very eventful month of July. I would also like to look ahead and touch a few issues the Council will need to continue to track closely in August and beyond. First, I thank the delegation of Rwanda for organizing an open debate 2 days ago on peacekeeping and partnership with regional and sub-regional organizations. The Council's adoption of the Rwandan-sponsored resolution helped remind us of the essential role regional organizations play in peacekeeping, not only in Africa, but elsewhere. These groupings are often the first responders for severe crises, crises that do not happen in a vacuum, that have repercussions across borders. Monday's session was timely, as the United Nations and many member states are rightly taking a fresh look at how to strengthen UN peacekeeping to better meet contemporary challenges. In this regard, we look forward to the comprehensive review of UN peacekeeping the Secretary General announced here last month and touched on again Monday. Mr. President, as I said, July has been an eventful and at times a very tragic month. The Council united on July 21st to adopt Resolution 2166 on the downing of Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 in Ukraine. This was an important step in our efforts to determine who was responsible for this horrific incident and to bring them to justice. The Netherlands has proposed to lead an international investigation, and the Netherlands and Australia have offered police to help secure the crash site. Malaysia is also working closely with other affected countries to send security and other personnel. The Dutch-led investigation will enable expert analysis of the evidence and, we hope, provide the answers to the questions citizens and governments and, of course, families are asking about Flight MH17. To this end, the United States has offered assistance. Representatives from the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the National Transportation and Safety Board are already in Ukraine, ready to work with investigators. Further on Ukraine, the High Commissioner for Human Rights report on Ukraine notes that a total breakdown of law and order and a reign of fear and terror have been inflicted by armed groups on the population of eastern Ukraine. The United States is committed to a diplomatic solution to the situation, and we remain concerned about Russia's support for pro-Russian separatists, including the flow of heavy weapons and rocket and artillery fire from Russia into Ukraine. Turning to Syria, the Council came together to support a new resolution to address the ongoing humanitarian crisis. Resolution 2165 opened four crossings on the Syrian border that will allow UN humanitarian agencies and their implementing partners to enter the country without needing a green light from the regime. If implemented fully, the resolution will allow critical aid to reach over 2 million Syrians who have been suffering without essential assistance over the past year. We were pleased to see the first of such convoys cross into Syria from Turkey last week. Proof of the dire situation in Syria was on prime display last Friday when the United Kingdom hosted an ARIA formula meeting with the Commission of Inquiry on Syria. As the Commission's report made clear, we need to maintain our focus on Syria as the regime continues to imprison tens of thousands of Syrians, including women, children, doctors, humanitarian aid workers, and journalists, subjecting them to torture, sexual violence, and inhumane treatment. Mr. President, although the Assad regime is the most egregious perpetrator of violations and abuses of international humanitarian and human rights law in Syria, the rapid gains of violent extremist groups in Syria, particularly ISIL, are alarming. In this context, we welcome the adoption of a presidential statement last Monday on the terrorist oil trade in Syria and Iraq. In the coming weeks and months, Syria must remain front and center. The Council must continue to press for a political solution to the conflict, for accountability for violations of human rights abuses of human rights, and to hold Syria to its commitment to completely eliminate its chemical weapons program, including materials and facilities. Also, Mr. President, the ISIL threat merits our full attention. The Council and regional and international partners must remain focused on supporting the government of Iraq as it combats ISIL and other violent extremist groups. This means working together to support a sound counterterrorism strategy against these groups. It also means supporting the efforts of Iraq's elected representatives to form a new government that reflects a broad national consensus. In this regard, we were pleased to adopt just this morning the one-year extension of the UNAMI mandate, whose work remains absolutely essential to all of these efforts. Elsewhere in the Middle East, the situation related to Gaza will require our focus. In his meetings in the region aimed at securing a ceasefire, Secretary Kerry expressed support for Israel's right to defend itself and called for the end of Hamas rocket fire. yet he also expressed our deep concern for civilians, especially women and children on both sides affected by the hostilities. We continue to call on the parties to comply with international humanitarian law, including the respect for and protection of civilians, as well as civilian and humanitarian facilities. We condemn Hamas's use of civilian facilities for military purposes, and we reiterate the inviolability of UN facilities. The United States has been clear. President Obama and Secretary Kerry have both called for an immediate and unconditional humanitarian ceasefire. A prolonged humanitarian ceasefire would significantly de-escalate the situation, allow for the distribution of urgently needed humanitarian assistance, including medicine and food, and allow for serious negotiations to restore a permanent cessation of hostilities. Any process aimed at achieving a lasting and meaningful resolution to the crisis related to Gaza must also result in the disarmament of Hamas and other terrorist groups. We will work closely with the international community in support of this goal. Finally, Mr. President, we look forward to the Security Council trip that is coming up next month. The swiftly unfolding crises we face today do not allow us many moments to reflect. But taking some time to consider events leading to and the horrors of the First World War should give us new impetus as we strive to help and end these conflicts. The second part of the trip to Somalia and South Sudan will offer us an important chance to push for peace in places where conflict has persisted far too long. Thank you.
Thank the representative of the United States for her statement. I give now the floor to the representative of the Republic of Korea.
Thank you, Mr. President. Let me also congratulate you and your fantastic Rwandan team on the successful presidency for the month of July. You have led the council with great stewardship and diplomatic skills in dealing with an unusual number of difficult issues. We also welcome your initiative in conducting this wrap-up session in a public briefing format. To our frustration, July has been marred by the loss of a great number of civilian lives in conflicts, as well as ongoing humanitarian crises in many parts of the world. Faced with the escalation of the situation in Gaza, the Council has met for four emergency meetings and an open debate on the Middle East. We commend Secretary General Ban Ki-moon for his tireless efforts to engage the region's leaders through his visits. The Republic of Korea deplores the intensification of hostilities as well as the tragic loss of lives, and urges the parties to immediately engage in the efforts to achieve a durable ceasefire. In the meantime, the international community must expedite its humanitarian assistance to the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. In this regard, the Republic of Korea has decided to contribute $1 million to assist the Palestinian people. As for Syria, the Council unanimously adopted Resolution 2165 regarding the cross-line and cross-border humanitarian assistance to Syria. The adoption was modest yet meaningful progress. However, the meaningfulness of the resolution will not be judged by the unanimity of its adoption, but by the degree of its implementation. This Council must fulfill its commitment to take further measures in the event of non-compliance with Resolution 2139 or Resolution 2165. We welcome the appointment of Special Envoy Stefan de Mistura and look forward to his efforts to revive the stalled peace negotiations. The downing of Malaysian Airlines flight MH17 was also one of the several issues at the top of the Council's agenda this month. By unanimously adopting Resolution 2166, the Council spoke with one voice to ensure that this tragedy is fully investigated and that the victims are afforded the respect they deserve. While it is encouraging that there has been progress in recovering bodies following the adoption of the resolution, we remain concerned that the crash site has yet to be properly investigated. We reiterate that all concerned parties must comply with their obligations under Security Council Resolution 2166 and fully cooperate with the international investigation. Last but not least, the Security Council issued a strong and unequivocal warning against the DPRK's continued launches of ballistic missiles through the press element adopted on 17 July. Despite this solemn warning, however, the DPRK launched another ballistic missile on 26 July. We condemn the DPRK's unrelenting provocations as violations of the UN Security Council resolutions and as clear defiance of the authority of the Council itself. We strongly urge the DPRK to desist from any acts that can further disrupt the peace and stability of the region and beyond. In this vein, the Republic of Korea welcomes the recent progress made in the DPRK sanctions regime as a result of the Cheongcheon-gang case. This is an example of the UN sanctions regime working properly in response to serious violations. Once again, congratulating the Rwandan presidency on its achievements in July, we look forward to having another month of fruitful work in August under the UK presidency. Thank you.
Thank the representative of the Republic of Korea for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of China.
Mr. President, China wishes to thank you for convening today's meeting. The Security Council has a very busy agenda this month. It convened open debate on the Middle East and on PKOs. It considered hotspot issues on Syria, Lebanon, the Middle East, CAR, Libya, Iraq, and Cyprus. It adopted resolutions on UN cooperation with regional organizations in peacekeeping, resolution on Syrian humanitarian situation, on the downing of MH17, and on the extension of mandate for UNAMI and UNFISIP. China highly appreciates the effort of Rwanda as the rotating president of the Security Council for this month in facilitating the successful conclusion of the Council's work for this month. On the Syrian issue, the Security Council this month unanimously adopted Resolution 2165 on Syria, which identified priority areas for Syrian humanitarian rescue efforts, which once again built up the international consensus on the Syrian humanitarian issue and reiterated the importance of political settlement to the Syrian issue. China hopes that parties concerned will keep close cooperation, comprehensively and conscientiously implement Resolution 2165 and the previous resolutions and PRST of the Security Council, and effectively improve the humanitarian situation in Syria. In the meantime, parties concerned should stick to the overall direction of political settlement by stepping up efforts to relaunch Geneva peace talks as soon as possible and seek political settlement to the issue on the basis of Geneva Communique of 2012 and blaze a middle way that is consistent with Syria's national conditions and accommodates the interests of all parties. China stands ready to play a constructive role in this regard. On the issue of Palestine and Israel, Gaza conflict has caused massive civilian casualties and destructions, leading to severe humanitarian crisis. We urge all parties to implement immediate ceasefire. We condemn all acts of force against innocent civilians. We urge parties to stop answering violence with violence and implement sustained ceasefire. China always believes that peace talks represents the only way to achieve peaceful coexistence between the two countries. We urge parties to create necessary conditions for the resumption of talks. We appreciate the efforts by the SG Ban Ki-moon Egypt and other Arab countries and the international community in alleviating the situation, China's special envoy on the Middle East has also been conducting shuttle mediation between Israel and Palestine. China stands ready to work with the international community to promote comprehensive, just, and sustained solution to the Palestine issue. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of China for his statement. I give now the floor to the representative of France.
Merci, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you, Mr. President. Dear colleagues, I'd like to start by thanking Ambassador Cassano and his whole team for their work this month. The second presidency, as professional as the first, will unfortunately have been marked by tragedies in Ukraine and the East, Middle East, in a very charged atmosphere. You have conducted your work with a cool head, day by day, night by night, 7 days a week. Mr. President, I hope that future presidents will emulate the formula that you have presented today. Mr. President, the fighting continued in Ukraine after their refusal of the separatists to lay down their arms, and worse, there is an indication that there's external support for the separatists, and it's increased, especially with the transfer of long-range weapons. And the Russians continue to work on the one side for appeasement, on the other side, they support these thugs. Their double game needs to stop, because when we arm weapons, anything can happen. And unfortunately, the downing of the Malaysian Airlines is a tragic illustration of this. And it is this context that the Council met urgently the day after to express its horror and emotion given this disaster. And a number of countries lost their citizens, and we would like to express our solidarity with them. We would ask, after this meeting, all members of the Security Council called for an international investigation. A resolution was adopted to that end unanimously for Ukraine to assume responsibility to conduct it and Secretary General to report regularly. The presence of three ministers of foreign affairs for the adoption of that resolution, Australia, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands, showed how the attachment of public opinion to light being shed on this event. Due to a lack of security, the investigators have not been able to begin their mission, and it's urgent that the necessary conditions be established to that end. Mr. President, the drama of the crisis in Gaza imposes the greatest firmness for us. The human toll is disastrous, with more than 1,200 Palestinian victims, mostly civilians, and that calls upon us to bring more pressure to bear on the parties. As the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Fabius, said in Paris on the 26th of July, urgency compels us to an immediate ceasefire without conditions, renewable humanitarian assistance, and that would be a first stage, which would make it possible to then obtain as quickly as possible a negotiated and lasting ceasefire that would respond to legitimate needs of the Israelis for security and the legitimate needs of the Palestinians for protection of civilians, access, and reconstruction socioeconomically. We must associate the Palestinian Authority to working towards this goal based on the Egyptian initiative. Finally, this crisis once again underscores the urgency of once again giving back a horizon, political horizon, to the Palestinians and Israelis. Only credible negotiations between the parties can lead to a lasting and fair settlement, with two democratic states living side by side in security and within internationally recognized borders. Mr. President, despite all the efforts undertaken to date, the path of weapons has continued to prevail in Syria over that of political dialogue. The Syrian regime bears shattering responsibility in this regard. It never even thought about anything other than military victory. It has refused to engage seriously in negotiations, preferring rather to lay siege, bomb, and torture all those that resist them or who clamored peacefully at first for reform, as shown again by the Commission of Inquiry of Mr. Pinedo last Friday. They preferred to favor the rise of terrorist groups, which they have now lost control of and which constitute a threat to the stability of the region. Given this, the moderate opposition continues alone to fight two forms of extremism, on the one hand the regime and on the other hand terrorists. It's only by supporting them further that we can promote the emergence of a free and democratic Syria, respectful of all of its citizens. The civilian population is paying the heaviest price for this current situation. Humanitarian aid must reach these people without any impediment, without political consideration, through the most direct routes, as required by our resolutions, but it is also important to relaunch the process to find a way out of the crisis and a true political transition based on the Geneva communication. We are also very pleased in that regard with the appointment of Mr. Dmitry Struda as the special representative, and we would like to thank Mr. Brahimi for his efforts. France is very concerned by the state of the situation in the Islamic Republic of Iraq and the ILIL, which is a threat to the integrity of the country and stability of the entire region. France most firmly condemns the barbarous acts of this organization against ethnic and religious minorities and all those that don't belong to its barbarous ideology, as well as the ultimatum launched against the Christians of Mosul. It's once again an illustration of the true nature of this terrorist organization. It's useful to recall obligations of states in the area of fighting the financing of terrorism, and the Council did so and expressed its concern given the access to oil zones and refineries by the ILIL, even though they're under sanctions, and Al-Qaeda, especially along with the al-Nusra Front, has also had access. France supports the Iraqi state in this fight against terrorism and believes that the only lasting solution can be political. Finally, given this panorama of Northern Africa and the Middle East, the example of Libya is another example of security unraveling and political confusion. France has asked its citizens to leave the country and has temporarily closed its offices at our embassy. After the elections, the priority must be given to Libyans to relaunch the political process. They must come together today around a common political project through a process of an inclusive national reconciliation. Violence today threatens this institutional perspective. We must therefore help them to conclude a ceasefire as quickly as possible. And to that end, the Libyans need strengthened international support. We must act coordinated and in a consistent manner, and there the United Nations has a key role to play. It's essential that they continue their commitment in Libya and they bring together all the efforts of the international community to help the Libyan political process. Mr. President, in this context, the rare good news comes from Africa, Mali first, and the Algiers consensus-based agreement to adopt a roadmap on inter-Malian negotiations. It's encouraging, and it was long awaited. The Council applauded it in a presidential statement. Good news also comes from the CAR with a political process since the political efforts of the International Contact Group in Addis Ababa on the 7th of July led to the Reconciliation Forum in July. And I would conclude, Mr. President, on South Sudan, because for 6 months now, the Security Council has increased its initiatives to try and find a settlement to the crisis in South Sudan by doubling the number of troops of the UN mission, by revising the mandate, by capacity building, supporting IGAD's mediation, and by integrating countries of the region's troops within UNMISS and to try and enforce respect of the ceasefire. Unfortunately, none of this has worked. And we heard Mrs. Amos sound the alarm on the situation for South population, and famine looms large at this point. The mandate of the mission is henceforth tightened on protection of civilians, promotion of human rights, and facilitating humanitarian access. This is key for us. But we must continue to think together about the best way of the Security Council having an impact on the disastrous situation in this country and saving lives. We must think about concrete ways, and we must sanction those that make civilians pay the high cost of this unquenchable thirst for power and riches. Thank you very much, and as you say in English, good luck to the United Kingdom. I thank the representative of France for his statement, says the President. Thank you.
The floor to the representative of Russian Federation.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. We're grateful to you for your leadership of the Security Council during this past month. The Council's work in July took place against the backdrop of a number of regional crises. Unfortunately, the Security Council was not able to play the role which the international community rightfully expects of it. Operations in the Gaza Strip continue, an operation with significant casualties amongst the Palestinians. Rockets continue to be fired against Israel. July 28th's presidential statement on the situation around Gaza, although it's accurate, it is not up to the situation and came just a tad late. It is clear that the Council's effectiveness in such cases hinges largely on the proactive work of penholders and delegations from the region. As experience has shown, crises between Israelis and Palestinians often erupt as a result of the fact that the unilateral efforts by the United States aimed at reconciling the parties have yet again failed. We repeatedly pointed to the fact that secretive methods of work have outlived their usefulness. The need to elaborate more effective mechanisms for a settlement is long overdue. We expect that in September, on the margins of the political discussion at the General Assembly, in-depth contacts will take place, including in-depth discussion of prospects for a settlement in the Middle East within the framework of a ministerial meeting of the Quartet. And then, in August, we propose that we have an informal brainstorming session at the Security Council, inviting high-level representatives from Washington, those who directly are involved with the process of the Middle Eastern settlement, for a detailed discussion on the current situation and the problems hampering progress within the framework of the peace process. Clearly, the primary task today is the rapid achievement of a sustainable ceasefire between Israelis and the Gaza Strip. Mr. President, on July 17th, all of us were shocked by the horrible tragedy which took place in the skies above Ukraine. 298 individuals aboard the Malaysian Airlines flight perished. The Security Council rapidly adopted Resolution 2166. 2166, which required a full, painstaking, and independent international investigation of this event in keeping with the guiding principles of international civil aviation, with an appropriate role being played by ICAO. One of the important provisions of the resolution, one which was incorporated upon the insistence of the Russian delegation, is the requirements to immediately cease in the region directly adjoining the disaster all military activities to secure and safeguard the area during the conduct of the international investigation. The president of Ukraine stated that military operations will cease in a radius of 40 kilometers around the crash site. This promise, however, was immediately broken, and Ukrainian officials quite publicly spoke of a new task: to cleanse this territory of self-defense formations and take it over. Such actions are a direct violation of Security Council Resolution 2166, and they are fraught with the most dangerous of consequences for the conduct of an objective and impartial international investigation. We fear that the authorities in Kyiv, pushed by a desire to destroy evidence which points to their role in the Malaysian Airlines disaster. On July 28th, the Russian delegation proposed to members of the Security Council to adopt a simple and ambiguous press statement, one which bolsters the provisions of Security Council Resolution 2166 on a ceasefire. However, it was quite unceremoniously blocked by some Security Council members, those who clearly were not interested in a full implementation of 2166. We welcome today's statement by the Secretary General of the United Nations calling for an immediate cessation of combat activities around the crash site. We know that the Netherlands, Australia, and Malaysia mobilized significant resources to carry out investigations at the crash site, having deployed to Kyiv and Donetsk groups of experienced experts. Many of them have formed solid contacts with the militiamen. For example, the special envoy of the Prime Minister of Australia, Angus Houston, noted the militiamen's professionalism and their constructive attitude regarding cooperation and the investigation. In this respect, I would ask the representative of Luxembourg to familiarize herself a little better with these statements and the statements of those who are present on the ground, to ensure that she does not come here with claims regarding what is taking place there. The statement by the representative of Lithuania here is something which I simply won't comment at. There is no objectivity or impartiality to be expected from this delegation. And so, it was impossible for the investigators to reach the crash site. Russia is providing every possible assistance to the investigations. Our relevant organization, Rosaviation, on the basis of her rich experience, has drawn up a set of questions which need to be clarified to clarify the full picture of the tragedy. Our experts have immediately started work subsequent to having been invited by Holland, having taken on the leadership in conducting the international investigation. We have handed over to international organizations, including the United Nations and the OSCE, our monitoring data of the area. We expect that others will act just as proactively and constructively, instead of the spreading of unsubstantiated accusations and insinuations. Mr. President, at the beginning of the month, glimmers of hope appeared that Ukraine would finally be able to break out from its cycle of violence. On July 2nd, the Berlin Declaration of Foreign Ministers of Russia, Germany, France, and Ukraine was adopted. President Poroshenko made a noteworthy statement, and I'm going to quote, "The hardworking and peace-loving people, which make up the majority of the population of the Donetsk and Luhansk regions, have felt our sympathy, our love, and our respect. The armed forces of Ukraine, its National Guard, and other units will never, never use force against civilians. They will never strike at residential neighborhoods. Ukrainian soldiers and guardsmen will place their own lives at risk to prevent harm from coming to children, women, and elderly men. Such is the noble, gentlemanly way of the Ukrainian military." End of quote. Sounds beautiful, doesn't it? However, in practice, the cruelty of the military operations led by the Kiev authorities is simply blinding. Korolovka, Donetsk, Lugansk, many other population centers were the targets of massive bombardments and fire, including indiscriminate fire from Grad systems and aerial bombardment. Strikes are being leveled at civilian facilities, including major transport and municipal thoroughfares, hospitals, residential neighborhoods. In Golovka alone, dozens of civilians perished. In the majority of cases, there were no self-defense members anywhere near those places. Does information regarding the use by Ukrainian military of ballistic missiles not speak of unbridled military escalation? All of this backs our qualification of the Kiev authorities' actions as a punitive operation targeted against its own population. Even according to official statistics, the number of deaths amongst the civilians have exceeded over 1,000 individuals. And according to unofficial sources, there are great many more. Just today, no less than 19 individuals died. Refugees continue to flee to Russian territory. Temporary shelter and permission to reside, as well as requests for citizenships, were requested by over 150,000 individuals. The number of those crossing the border and remaining in the Russian Federation runs in the hundreds of thousands. Ammunition fired by Ukrainian troops continues to strike Russian territory. On July 29th, Russian personnel at the customs post in Glukovo again found themselves under fire. It seems that Kiev does not wish normal work to be carried out there by the OSCE observer mission, which are to monitor the situation on the Russia-Ukrainian border. We demand of Kiev an end to firing against Russian territory and to respect the safety and security of international observers. We have immediately claimed that the attempt to resolve things in a military way in Ukraine is fraught with a great deal of risk, and that we shouldn't give pride and precedence to mutually respectful political dialogue between all the forces in Kiev and the regions. The priority now should become a rapid ceasefire and cessation of military activities and the forging of peaceful dialogue on the basis of the Berlin Declaration of July 2nd and the Geneva Process, 17th of April. Another important topic of the international community in the fight against terrorism was the adoption on July 28th, upon the initiative of the Russian Federation, of a presidential statement which condemned the illegal trafficking of oil with terrorist groups which are active in Syria and Iraq. We expect that the successful implementation of what was adopted on July 14th, I'm referring to Security Council Resolution 2165, will enable us to in some way lighten the suffering of the long-suffering population in Syria. The statement on 17th of July, the Special Representative of the Secretary General, Mr. Mitri, and of the Foreign Minister of Libya, Mr. Abdelabdiz, confirmed that the situation in the country is deteriorating rapidly. One cannot exclude the possibility of it splitting into a number of individual regions which are fighting with each other. Extremists are raging there, and they have forged relations with the whole region of the Middle East and Northern Africa. This clearly shows an escalation of the current situation there. There might be a need to re-look or reconsider the presence of the UN in Libya. An issue of deep concern is the situation in Iraq. The catalyst for the present iteration of the situation is the external support provided to terrorists in Syria, although the roots, of course, of the situation stretch way deeper. They lie back in the events of 2003. Now Islamists are threatening the whole of the Middle East and beyond. Regarding the process of the creation of new institutions of authority, well, they must be genuinely Iraqi. Only thus will we achieve national reconciliation. Mr. President, we note July 28th's meeting on the issue of cooperation between the United Nations and regional nations in the field of Kipling upon the initiative of Rwanda. We back the bolstering of such cooperation under Chapter 8 of the UN Charter. By way of conclusion, we'd like to wish every possible success to the delegation of the United Kingdom, which will be the Council in August. Thank you.
I thank the representative of the Russian Federation for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of the United Kingdom.
Thank you, Mr. President, for all of your and your team's hard work during this month's presidency and for convening today's wrap-up session. I particularly welcome the fact that this session is being held in public. It is good to see the Council can build on its past practice and enhance the transparency of these discussions. I hope to repeat this format at the end of our presidency next month. Mr. President, comparing the programme of work issued at the start of the month with the current programme of work, it is clear to see how much of the Council's time this month has been taken up with emerging and worsening crises. We have had emergency meetings on weekends and late into the night, and unforeseen adoptions at short notice. This included the unanimous adoption of Resolution 2165 on the 14th of July, which marked a major step forward in our efforts to respond to the suffering in Syria and cut through the obstructions that the regime had been putting in the way of delivery of humanitarian aid directly to those in need. Mr. President, the shooting down of Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 over eastern Ukraine shocked us all. The Council came together quickly to respond through a press statement and followed this up in short order with the adoption of Resolution 2166, demanding dignified and respectful treatment of the bodies of the victims, immediate access to the crash site, and full cooperation by all states with the investigation and with efforts to establish accountability. Disgracefully, the pro-Russian separatists in control of the crash site have from the very first day tried to cover up what happened. They treated the victims' bodies with appalling disrespect. They were deliberately slow to provide access, preventing the professional and rapid follow-up action that was needed to secure evidence at the site. These actions created untold additional distress to the families of the victims. Mr. President, the Council has a collective responsibility for the maintenance of international peace and security. But every member also has an individual responsibility to meet the obligations set out in the Charter. The Russian Federation has not lived up to these responsibilities. Quite apart from illegally annexing Crimea, the Russian Federation could have brought about the end of the fighting in eastern Ukraine weeks ago. Instead, it has sought to foment the unrest, providing weapons and political support to the separatists with predictably tragic consequences. Against this, President Poroshenko has provided repeated opportunities for the separatists to engage in dialogue, removing entirely their basis for taking up arms. For this reason, the Council will have to keep its attention on the situation in eastern Ukraine during the month of August. Mr. President, the Council has also had to respond with emergency meetings this month to the terrible situation in Gaza. It is deeply tragic that so many innocent civilians have been killed and injured in the current crisis. Both sides must do their utmost to de-escalate the situation and avoid further injury and loss of innocent life. The people of Israel have the right to live without constant fear for their security, but the people of Gaza also have the right to live safely in peace. The adoption of a presidential statement late on Sunday night on the eve of Eid al-Fitr underlined this Council's concern at the conflict and echoed the call by the Secretary General for an immediate and unconditional humanitarian ceasefire. While we must do all that we can to alleviate the suffering, and the United Kingdom is providing $3 million to help UNRWA in this regard, the priority must be to achieve a durable ceasefire that ends this cycle of violence. A ceasefire agreement must therefore address the underlying causes of the crisis. It needs to secure full implementation of both Security Council Resolution 1860 and the November 2012 ceasefire agreement. There will need to be concerted action to get a grip on the security situation and open up Gaza's economy. The Palestinian Authority must return to Gaza. Until the crisis is resolved, the Council must remain ready to do what it can, reinforcing the messages and actions of international partners to bring about a comprehensive and lasting peace. Finally, Mr. President, let me congratulate you for your open debate on peacekeeping and regional partnerships on Monday. This was a welcome and thoughtful follow-up to the debate on new trends in peacekeeping held under the Russian presidency in June. Making peacekeeping operations efficient and effective remains a vital strand of work for the Council and for the Secretariat. The Secretary General's review of peacekeeping will form a central part of this. At the same time, the more this Council can do to prevent conflict, the less we will have to turn to the last resort of deploying a peacekeeping operation. And looking ahead to our presidency, we plan to hold an open debate on this topic to ask questions about what more the Council should be doing to respond to the early warning signs we can all see and take the early action that would help to prevent conflicts escalating. I thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of the United Kingdom for his statement. I give now the floor to the representative of Jordan.
Sayyid Rais.
Mr. President, allow me in the outset to express our thanks and appreciation to you for your efficient stewardship of the Council's affairs during the month of July, which witnessed great developments in the international arena in relation to the various issues falling within the scope of the Council's work, especially the tragic developments in the Middle East, especially in Gaza, Syria, Iraq. The Council continued to follow up the developments in Ukraine, in addition to the issues related to the important and diverse African files. It would be a remiss not to commend all the efforts made in organizing debates on peacekeeping operations. In this respect, my delegation would not delve into the details of the aforementioned issues, the important thematic issues, towards which my delegation has expressed its position in details during the Council's debate. It has also engaged with all Council members in a constructive, positive manner to explain positions and to reach a consensus with a view to shouldering the responsibilities on the Council in this respect. Our intervention would focus only on the procedural matters alluded to by our delegation in the meeting of last March. We have reiterated those issues and our three proposals on the procedural matters in subsequent meetings in order to improve the work of the Council through the informal working group on documentation and other procedural matters. In conclusion, Mr. President, my delegation wishes all success for UK in its presidency in the next month. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. President.
Statement, I give now the floor to the representative of Nigeria. You have the floor, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I also want to join others in thanking you and your very efficient team, not only for your spirit of endurance in a tumultuous month, but especially for a superlative performance, even in the face of the numerous demands for your attention. Mr. President, the wrap-up session offers us an opportunity for self-assessment. And you have gone further to provide a concept note to guide our discussion. I believe that this opportunity for self-assessment we could also utilize as a springboard for the future. The month of July was characterized by very robust engagement on numerous rapidly developing situations all around the globe. I want to limit my intervention to three issues, namely the Central African Republic, the situation in Gaza, and Ukraine. On the Central African Republic, the Council noted the state of preparations for the full deployment of MINUSCA as it is poised to assume full authority from the African Union-led peacekeeping operation, MISCA, on the 15th of September this year. The violence has imposed a very heavy humanitarian toll on CAR. And it is important to note that for a while, the spate of tragedies in other theaters of conflict appeared to distract this council from the traditional areas of conflict. Some time ago, I talked about the forgotten conflicts, Yemen, Central African Republic, DRC. And I believe that the challenge for this council in the future is how to maintain a prudent balance in its attention to threats to international peace and security. There is a tendency for us to concentrate our attention to the immediate conflicts while we forget others that are still broiling. And I draw the analogy of a mother with six triplets, all of them crying for attention. She has to be very creative to deal with it. And I think we are encouraged by, in spite of this omission, we are encouraged by the regional initiatives that have taken place while we were paying attention to other things. This is in CAR. The signing of a cessation of hostilities and violence in Brazzaville on the 23rd of July should serve as a point of departure in the search for peace in that country. And this brings me to the debate that we held a few days ago on partnerships in peacekeeping operations. While we were distracted, the regional arrangement was in full force, and that served to bridge the gap. And I think that this phenomenon, this development, must be encouraged. The tensions over the kidnap and killing of three Israeli students and the apparent revenge killing of a Palestinian teenager evolved into a major conflict between Israel and Palestine. The story has been replayed in this chambers on and off. We regret that despite the calls by well-meaning leaders around the world for de-escalation and restraint, the conflict has continued to deepen both in intensity and in its scope, claiming numerous lives, including those of women and children. As we speak, the death toll on both sides is on the increase. I believe that our preoccupation at this point must be to do everything possible to propel the parties to respect their commitments to ceasefires, one that will permit the creation of corridors for the delivery of humanitarian supplies. While the Council responded swiftly by holding two emergency sessions, it is unfortunate that it could only agree on a presidential statement 3 weeks after the outbreak of hostilities. In the future, this council should aim for a quick and robust action, action designed to avoid colossal loss of lives and ameliorate human suffering. Mr. President, the third issue, the downing of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17 on the 17th of July, was a very regrettable, tragic, and unfortunate incident. In the face of what seemed like an apocalyptic end of the world, the Council kept the world in suspense for a while over an obviously amoral act capable of being replicated in other parts of the world. We can see the copycat tendency in the world today. The eventual unified stance of the Security Council in denouncing and condemning this incident with the adoption of Resolution 2166 must be commended. In adopting this resolution, the Council has demonstrated that it is capable of speaking with one voice when it so chooses. This is precisely the higher moral ground which the world expects from this Council. Indeed, this must constitute the pattern for the future. It must serve as a credible scaffolding on which the future of global peace and security will be built. We want to take this opportunity to present this scaffolding to the UK delegation as it assumes the presidency, and we do it with tremendous confidence, hoping that this will be the pattern for the future in the Council. Thank you.
I thank the representative of Nigeria for her statement. I give now the floor to the representative of Chile.
Gracias, señor presidente.
Thank you, sir. Firstly, we'd like to congratulate you for your ongoing leadership, and we'd like to thank your team as well for your excellent presidency over the month of July. We welcome the convening of this public wrap-up session, which we believe is a vital instrument for the work of this Council, and we encourage that it be maintained. Mr. President, I'd like to begin by referring to two lessons learned during the month of July, which we believe contributed to improving the way in which the Security Council addresses challenges to international peace and security. The crash of the Malaysian Airlines MH17 plane downed on the Thursday, 17th of July in East Ukraine once again brought pressure to bear on the Security Council to grapple with a crisis that led to the death of dozens of civilians and which was a threat to international stability. Despite differences on the matter, we were able to adopt a press statement on the 18th of July, which sought to ensure that an international investigation be conducted that would be impartial and complete. And this call was reaffirmed shortly after through Resolution 2166, adopted unanimously. Moreover, the adoption on the 14th of June of Resolution 2165 of the Security Council on the humanitarian situation in Syria also showed that when we decide to focus our discussions on specific items and on specific concrete measures on the ground, it is possible to make progress and achieve results. In this specific case, the discussions focused on the opening of 4 border crossings and the establishing of a monitoring mechanism, responsibility for distribution of humanitarian assistance once it had entered into Syrian territory. All of those were concrete and pragmatic issues. It was possible to see in those discussions how member states showed flexibility and worked in a constructive spirit in order to achieve a consensus. While It is too early for a prognosis on the application of the resolution. The passage of the first convoy of humanitarian assistance through the Bab al-Salam crossing on the 24th of July is encouraging. We hope that this will be the beginning of a process that will contribute to alleviating the critical humanitarian situation affecting millions of Syrians, and we hope that the resolution will continue to be implemented, unlike Resolution 2139 and the President's statement of 2 October of last year. Notwithstanding that, we are aware that it is only a political solution that will make it possible to put an end to the humanitarian crisis. Unanimous approval of both resolutions bolstered the Council by creating a show of unity. It also reflected the fact that it is possible for the Security Council to forge a common vision in order to fulfill its responsibilities. Mr. President, we cannot, however, just look at the positive aspects. If we were to take a moment to analyze the effectiveness of this Council in maintaining international peace and security, there is no better example than the situation in the Middle East, including the peace process, to show that the Security Council is not completely fulfilling the role assigned to it by the Charter. Indeed, the situation in the Middle East was addressed by the Security Council and has done so since the very beginnings of the United Nations, with the first resolution on the matter dating back to 1948. However, we see today that the Security Council seems to be irrelevant in preventing continued escalation of the violence from last 8 July, where the beginning of Operation Protective Edge began, causing the deaths of thousands, including civilians, men, women, and children in Palestine, and more than 100 in Israel, as the result of the disproportionate use of force in Gaza and the constant threat of rockets on Israel and the use of tunnels by the militants who are armed, the armed branch of the Hamas. We think it's key that this body do everything within its scope in order to achieve an immediate ceasefire and impose the respective international humanitarian law, preventing worsening of the conflict. In that regard, adoption of the presidential statement of the Security Council last 28 July presented by Jordan is greatly relevant, since this body reassumed the role that is its role in a conflict. But it has not exhausted discussions on other possible actions. While the conflict persists, the Council must consider new options, including strengthening the role of the Quartet. Also, we would reiterate that the Council must firmly demand compliance with the resolutions in keeping with Article 25 of the United Nations Charter. We would specifically highlight compliance with Resolution 2143 in this regard. We believe that it is vital for the Security Council to address the root causes of the conflict, echoing the call of Secretary General of the United Nations to find a comprehensive solution to this grave crisis, including the political, humanitarian, security, and development aspects, in order to make it possible for Israel and Palestine to live in peace with safe borders that are internationally recognized. Finally, we wish every success to the incoming president, the United Kingdom. Thank you very much, sir.
I thank the representative of Chile for his statement. I give now the floor to the representative of Australia. I have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. This month, of course, has been a hard one. On 17 July, we learned of the downing of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17 over Ukrainian territory controlled by separatists, killing all 298 passengers and crew. 80 of the victims were children. The victims were citizens of Australia, Belgium, Canada, Germany, Indonesia, Malaysia, Netherlands, New Zealand, Philippines, and the United Kingdom. A number were dual nationals of other countries. This devastating incident reminds us that in an increasingly globalized world, the individual stake of each member state in international peace and security is greater than ever before. It reminds us that we all have an interest in a UN Security Council that can respond effectively. On 18 July, The following day, the Council unanimously condemned the downing of flight MH17. It followed quickly on 21 July with a decisive resolution to ensure a full, thorough and independent international investigation, to demand immediate and unrestricted access to the site to allow for the recovery of the bodies and the work of the investigation to proceed, to prohibit any actions that compromised the integrity of the crash site, most notably by local armed groups, and to insist that those responsible be held accountable. This was what the international community expected of the Council. This is what the Council agreed. But in itself, of course, as we know, it is not enough. We now need full and urgent implementation of Resolution 2166. At the request of Ukraine, the Netherlands has taken the lead in the investigation with the assistance of ICAO and other international partners. Dutch and Australian unarmed personnel, in numbers, have been deployed to provide protection to the investigators at the crash site and to assist with the removal of the remaining bodies and belongings and to secure wreckage and physical evidence. In this, we, the Australian deployment and Dutch, and the Australian Special Envoy, Air Chief Marshal Angus Houston, just mentioned by Ambassador Churkin, have meticulously worked through the OSCE as the sole contact on our behalf with the local armed separatists. Unfortunately, the Australian and Dutch personnel have not yet been able to access the site because of local conditions, but urgent access remains imperative as conditions at the site deteriorate. All of this makes plain that full and immediate implementation of 2166 is a serious obligation. Certainly my own country is determined to bring home our 38 dead, identify those responsible, and pursue justice. While the Council's progress in delivering a resolution on humanitarian relief to the people of Syria was measured in weeks rather than days, as with MH17 and the resolution, Resolution 2165 again demonstrated, as our Chilean colleague has just noted, that the Council can break new ground in resolving even seemingly intractable issues. 2165 authorised cross-border access by UN humanitarian agencies and their partners to enable them to reach an estimated 2.9 million in need. As we were informed by USG Amos earlier today, the first humanitarian convoy has crossed the Turkish border under the new arrangements. The adoption of resolutions such as these two is a primordial part of the Council's work, but the Council needs to constantly remind itself that securing agreement on text is of little use if it does not also relentlessly pursue implementation of its decisions. The adoption in February of Resolution 2139 on humanitarian issues in Syria was a direct response to the Syrian regime's failure to abide by the provisions of the Council's earlier presidential statement of 2nd October last year. The Council received reports systematically each month from the Secretary-General on implementation of 2139, which laid out starkly how dramatically the humanitarian situation continued to deteriorate. It was unchallengeable from these reports that the parties were not implementing the resolution's obligations and that a stronger Council response was therefore needed. We did this with a groundbreaking resolution in 2165. We did in 2165. And as a Council, we have a responsibility to ensure that that resolution and its parent, 2139, which of course remains fully in force, are implemented in full and to take further measures if non-compliance continues. Of course, to pursue implementation, the Council needs the right information at the right time. It must not be hostage to routine reporting cycles. Rather, it should increase its attention on threats to international peace and security as they emerge and as situations demand. The Council has recently increased the tempo of its consideration of Libya and used any other business, AOB, to consider a number of immediate developments, including on Yemen and Iraq. This is how the Council should work, consistently. The Council also needs access to a broad range of information. not only from the SRSGs and the Department of Political Affairs, but from other actors, including the Secretary-General's Special Envoys. As the Rights Up Front initiative has affirmed, understanding the human rights dimensions of a situation is a crucial element of the Council's work, and this means it should be looking at what commissions of inquiry and the human rights special mechanisms can offer the Council. To pursue implementation, the Council needs to be ready to fully utilise the tools that are available to us. The Council's willingness to establish new sanctions regimes in Yemen and CAR, and to consider doing so in South Sudan, overdue, has been welcome. But sanctions will only work as a policy tool if properly implemented. This requires closer engagement with affected states, including assistance to meet the conditions and to implement the obligations of Council sanctions, and better coordination with other Council responses to the specific situation and across sanctions regimes generally. Australia hopes the high-level review of UN sanctions, which we are co-chairing, can help deliver this. The Council also needs to support implementation of mandates it gives to other actors, like the International Criminal Court. The Council took the right decision in referring the situations in Darfur and in Libya to the ICC, but like all decisions of the Council, these referrals need follow-up action by the Council to be effective. The Council must shoulder its responsibility to support the Court's efforts to fulfil the mandates the Council gave it, that we gave it. A good start would be responding to the Court's 8 letters about the failure of some states to cooperate with the ICC in relation to the Darfur referral. Finally, the Council must be ready to innovate to ensure implementation. It must also cooperate with regional organisations and other relevant institutions, including the ICC, to achieve Council objectives. Mr. President, the world is now experiencing more simultaneous crises in peace and security with broader impact across the globe than for decades. Major humanitarian crises inevitably result and themselves become the source of further instability. The demand for peacekeeping is increasing. Civilians are at a greater threat in larger numbers than any time since World War II. 51 million people are displaced. In this world, protection of civilians becomes an even more central and compelling part of the work of the Council, and the Council's success in protecting people has become the measure to which we are held. Failure is always standing there close by. It is only through a relentless focus on implementation of Council decisions that we'll be able to meet that measure. Thank you, Mr. President, and congratulations to you and all your team for a successful and helpful presidency, and good luck to the incoming UK presidency, another tough month in prospect.
I thank the representative of Australia for his statement. I shall now make a statement in my capacity as the representative of Rwanda. Let me start by thanking my colleagues, members of the Security Council, for their continued support to the Rwanda presidency and for their full cooperation, which enabled us to carry out the program of this busy, unpredictable, and nocturnal month of July 2014, ending tomorrow with another, emergency meeting in Gaza, on Gaza. I shall also congratulate Sir Mark Lyle Grant, permanent representative of the United Kingdom, for assuming the presidency of the Security Council for the month of August 2014. I'm particularly pleased that the UK presidency is proposing to organize an open debate on prevention of conflict, which is in line with the briefing that Rwanda had organized in April 2013 on the prevention of conflicts in Africa by addressing their root causes. I also appreciate that Ambassador Grant and his team will continue organizing wrap-up sessions under the format of a public briefing. Dear colleague, as you all know, the main topic of this month of July 2014 was the thematic debates on peacekeeping, as Rwanda is celebrating this very month its 10th anniversary in peacekeeping operations. You will recall that 2 days ago, on Monday, 28th July, Rwanda convened an open debate on regional partnerships in peacekeeping and its evolution, during which Resolution 2167 of 2014 was unanimously adopted. This resolution expressed its determination to take effective steps to further enhance the relationship between the United Nations and regional and sub-regional organizations, in particular the African Union, in accordance with Chapter 8 of the Charter of the United Nations. It further stressed the need to enhance the predictability, sustainability, and flexibility of financing regional organizations when they undertake peacekeeping under a Security Council mandate. Furthermore, Rwanda firmly believes that peacekeeping, multidimensional and robust as it may be, cannot alone resolve conflicts. Indeed, maintenance of international peace and security requires concrete, coordinated, and sustained action from the stage of conflict prevention to that of post-conflict peace building. It is in this context that the Security Council held on Tuesday, 15th July, a briefing on post-conflict peace building. This meeting was followed by an informal interactive dialogue between members of the Security Council, the PBC chairs group, countries on the PBC agenda, and with the Assistant Secretary General for Peace Building Support. The meeting was frank, direct, and fruitful, as it was an opportunity to further discuss on how to strengthen the PBC advisory function to the Security Council and on how to address the recurring relapse into conflict. Nonetheless, Rwanda regretted that while all PBC configurations were represented at an ambassadorial level, Council members were, most of them, represented at a lower level. Not to mention that among the six countries on the PBC agenda, only Sierra Leone, represented by its permanent representative, attended the informal interactive dialogue. So, dear colleague, this month of July 2014, the Security Council also considered a number of country-specific situations. It is important to know that although African conflicts continue to be present in our work, they were not a majority of situations considered in the program of work for July 2014. However, this was not due to the reduction of conflicts in Africa, always dominated by crisis in South Sudan and Central African Republic, but to the worsening situations in other parts of the world, particularly in the Middle East and in Ukraine. In Syria, following the violation of Resolution 2139 of 2014 by all sides, the Council unanimously adopted this month another humanitarian resolution, Resolution 2165 of 2014, by which it authorized UN humanitarian agencies to use routes across conflict lines and four additional border crossings in order to ensure that humanitarian assistance reaches people in need throughout Syria through the most direct routes. On Ukraine, the Security Council met in emergency on Friday, 18 July, following the shooting down of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17 in eastern Ukraine, resulting in the tragic loss of 298 lives. The Council also adopted a press statement followed by a resolution calling for a full, thorough, independent, and unhindered international investigations. In the Middle East, the Security Council was yet again confronted with the resumption of hostilities related to Gaza. Given the magnitude of the conflict, which took more than 1,300 lives so far, mostly civilians, women, and children, the Security Council adopted for the first time since 2009 a Council product on the Palestinian question, in this case a presidential statement, calling for an immediate and unconditional ceasefire. Unfortunately, this presidential statement was not implemented on the ground, and tomorrow morning, the Security Council will again convene in emergency to consider the humanitarian consequences of this conflict. It is worth noting that these three situations, Syria, Ukraine, and Gaza, Israel, brought to light in a single month the division among Council members, especially when involving interests of the permanent members. To be fair, the Security Council should be commended for overcoming its divisions and adopting critical decisions such as Resolution 2165 on Syria, Resolution 2166 on Malaysia Airlines Flight MH17, and the presidential statement on Gaza. But nonetheless, it is clear that in July 2014, like in previous months, members of the Security Council were once again unable or unwilling to use their influence to find a sustainable political solution to all those crises. In relation to this, Rwanda believes that as far as the work of the Security Council is concerned, initial consultations between the permanent members alone or between penholders and countries of the region on a particular situation are important to clear the ground and facilitate a smooth decision of the Security Council. However, we also believe, as reminded by the 2014 FIFA World Cup, which ended this month, that teamwork or team spirit, more than individuals, is the best chance for success. We therefore recall that this council comprises of 15 members and that all of them should be given enough time to consult and contribute to its work and to its decisions. To conclude, dear colleagues, I would like to thank you and member states for participating in this wrap-up session and in other public meetings convened by the Council this month, sometimes on short notice. I wish particularly to commend the UN members who actively participated in and contributed to the two open debates organized this month. I will, however, encourage African members of this organization to participate more in open debates of the Security Council, particularly those related to issues concerning Africa, such as the open debate on regional partnerships held last Monday. Indeed, Rwanda believes that the Security Council needs more than ever the contribution of the wider UN membership and their various experiences, which will help the Council in effectively carrying out its mandate of maintenance of international peace and security. I thank you. I resume my function as president of the Council now, and there are no more names, I think, inscribed on list of speakers. The Security Council has thus concluded the present stage of its consideration of the item on its agenda. Before adjourning the meeting, as this was scheduled to be the last meeting of the Council for the month of July 2014, before the situation in the Middle East decided otherwise, I would like to express the sincere appreciation of the delegation of Rwanda to the members of the Council, especially my colleagues, the permanent representatives, their respective staff, and to the Secretariat of the Council for all the support they have given to us. Indeed, it has been a busy month and one in which we rallied to consensus on several important issues within our purview. We could not have done it alone and without the hard work, support, and positive contributions of every delegation, the Secretary General, and the representatives of the Secretariat, as well as our very precious interpreters, translators, meeting services, and sound engineers. As we end our second and last presidency of Rwanda's current term in the Security Council, I know I speak on behalf also of the Council in wishing Sir Mark Lloyd Grant and the delegation of the United Kingdom good luck in the month of August, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.